Welcome back to the Innovation Room. I'm Daniel Guajardo alongside Rhiannon Huff here, and we are joined today by Rob Smead. He is the president of Electrum Supply and CEO of Electrum Inc., which is a tattoo supply and tattoo ink company. He's partner in Vault Tattoo and Video Game Tats, which Vault Tattoo is a studio, and Video Game Tats is actually a convention that they do. He's also the writer for the article "The Business of Tattooing," which appears in the Skin and Ink magazine, and he's a podcaster himself of Electrum Radio. So we'd like to welcome Rob. And how you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You want to maybe just go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit? Tell us about yourself, what you do.
Sure. So yeah, like I said, I'm Rob Smead. I own several successful ventures now at this point in my life. I've been an entrepreneur pretty much since the age of 17, and I started several ventures, failed at a lot, and finally landed on something that stuck, and I've been at it about 10 years now, and we just keep expanding our businesses and our reach in the tattoo industry and building upon the success that we've had.
Great, great. So is it fair to say that it didn't just take, one day? You didn't become successful overnight?
No, it's cost me a lot of hair and lots of gray beard here and bags under my eyes and lost friendships and all kinds of stuff. It's been a fun journey though.
Yeah, definitely. So it's pretty common in the culture of, I guess, my age group, the millennials, and maybe even the younger age groups, that they believe people just become successful overnight because of the few rare cases where someone might have appeared to become successful overnight on the internet. The reality is often really not so transparent this way. Do you think that like social media, quick investments, buying into cryptocurrency, those types of things are the way to go if you want to be an entrepreneur? Or, could you give us any advice on how to start?
Well, so I think of those as two different things, right? I don't consider like social media influencers or cryptocurrency investors really entrepreneurs. Those are completely different things. I think success on social media is gauged by how many likes you can get on a video or if something goes viral. It doesn't necessarily equate to dollars and cents or being able to pay your bills or things like that. So social media is a whole different game altogether. Obviously you can make a ton of money. There's 20-year-old kids out there making millions of dollars on social media. But I think the instances where that happens are pretty rare. And I think social media gives a lot of false pretense to a lot of people that really don't have a sense of how to get from point A to point B. Whereas if people stayed focused on a goal in life and tried to focus on actually creating something that's unique to them, a niche that they could specialize in, they would probably find success in the long term. And it would probably be a lot longer sustainable success than social media is. As far as cryptocurrency, that's a roller coaster ride. I've invested in cryptocurrency. I didn't get involved with it when it was the first, when Bitcoin first hit and it was a crazy thing where you could buy for 10 cents a share, a coin or whatever the heck. I didn't get into it. I thought it was a gimmick, I didn't get in it. And then, next thing Bitcoin's up to $50,000 a coin and people are making tons of money off of it. And then, just recently it crashed again. So I still don't know how I feel about cryptocurrency. I like to take safer bets with investments like, Amazon and things like that I know are long-term sustainable things. And I think if you're going to invest in things like that, you have to go with the safer plays. But a lot of people are very, very big risk takers. And I guess in your 20s, it's okay to take risks like that. But when you start getting in your late 30s, early 40s, you really can't afford to take risks like that anymore. You don't have that many working years left. So you have to focus on more sustainable investments and things that are going to more or less pay you out in the long run.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people may not understand the difference between speculation and investing, where cryptocurrency itself, I think, is a much more speculative market. It hasn't proven itself. And the only thing it has proven is that it's extremely volatile and it can go from 100 to zero in a day. But like you're saying, if you're younger and you're trying to get rich real quick, sure, that might be the way to go if you get lucky, but it's not really entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. Investing itself, I don't really think is entrepreneurship. You're more just, I have a bunch of money. Where should I put it to try to make more money? But that's what everybody kind of looks at when they think of starting their own business or their own firm or whatever they want to start organization. Social media is a great tool to get your name out there, to build your brand, but also not really, you can't be just a social media entrepreneur unless you have something that you're promoting. So I like these as tools. I think people should hopefully understand the difference a little better now, but I guess as an entrepreneur yourself, what did you start with? Did you start with finding a problem and then maybe looking for solutions to that problem? Like you said, you know, adding value to something.
Well, in this venture or in past venture, because I've had a lot of different things that I've done. When I was 17, I was a junior in high school. And I started a car stereo business with one of my best friends. I mean, that's the first business that I ever owned. And that was successful while I was in school. It wasn't successful after school because I didn't have contact with kids that wanted car stereos in their cars anymore, that had rich parents that could afford to buy that stuff for them. You know? So that was a pretty short-lived venture, you know. But as far as what I'm doing now and in the tattoo industry, yeah, there was a need for, you've got tattoos, so you know, when you go get a tattoo, they put a stencil on you first, and then they use that as kind of their foundation for the tattoo that they're putting on you. So I was tattooing at the time in a shop in Elkhart, and I was using the main product on the market at the time for a stencil application. And it was a product that had been on the market for about 10 years, and they were the definite industry giant for that demographic and products at the time. And it was a good product. It was decent, but there was room for improvement there, you know? And as an artist myself, you know, if you lose a stencil while you're tattooing, it's a very problematic thing because now you're not sure where lines go, and you know, you could end up with a completely different looking design than what it's supposed to be. So
yeah.
Well, we used to do a technique in tattooing called bloodlining. So it's like where you just kind of draw a line without ink in the tube or in the needle. And basically it just makes a red line on the skin. So if you lose your stencil, you still have that bloodline to work off of. But that's more traumatic to the client because you're not tattooing ink in them at that point. And then when you put ink in it, you're going back over the same line that's already been traumatized on the skin. Mm-hmm. So I set out to make a better stencil application product that would last longer on the skin throughout the duration of the whole tattoo. That was when Electrum was born, Electrum Stencil Primer in 2012. To summarize in a nutshell, I got really lucky. I had a friend that owned a tattoo ink company out in Oregon, and I sent samples of the product that I made out to him. Wasn't really even planning on taking it mainstream. You know, I just wanted something better in my day-to-day work. And it was so good for me that I wanted to send it out to my friends and give it to them so that they could try it out too. Well, my friend in Oregon that had the ink company, he loved it so much. He wanted me to think about it differently and actually start mass producing it. And then he linked me up with a distributor over in the United Kingdom who actually at the time was the second largest distributor in the United Kingdom. And then they really worked with me for about 2 years to develop really sound marketing strategies to get the product out in Europe. And that was pretty much the catalyst of everything that followed. You know, that product really took off. And today, it is now the top selling stencil application product in the entire world.
Wow.
You know, we've just built a dozen products off the back of that one. We built the supply company off of that. We built the tattoo ink company off of that. So we basically just regurgitated all of the money that we've made off of that one product and recirculated it back into the business and just keep growing it that way. We're self-funded, cash-free company. We've never taken out loans, anything. So it's been pretty good business.
So you found a need of your own that obviously affected a lot more people than yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and just grew that. So you had no idea in the beginning that it would take off as well as it did. You enjoyed using it, but it was, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of like goes back to the social media thing. You know, it's like you stick a video out there. You never know if it's going to go viral or not. Sometimes you put the dumbest thing out there and it goes viral. There's no rhyme or reason to it. It is or it isn't, you know.
Absolutely.
But I feel like that was a little different. You actually had something people wanted. And
yeah, but I didn't know if people were going to want it. You know, I think the same things when I make a video on social media. I think I'm the funniest guy in the world. People are going to love this video. And then it gets 2 likes and you're like, what the hell? I thought that was great.
That's true.
So part finding the need and then the other part luck. Somewhat.
Yeah. You know what? I think in any business, there's a lot of luck. You know, I've known a lot of business owners and CEOs and high level executives. And I think under the roots of education and just on the job experience in any business. And when you're a high level operational person, there's a lot of guesswork that goes into everything. You just, it's gambling day in and day out. You know, you get a new customer, you got a finagle, you got a wheel and deal. You never know what's going to work. You don't know what's not going to work. It's a lot of risk. And, you know, hopefully the risks pay off and you find rewards in there somewhere. Absolutely. That's the difference between successful business people and people that aren't successful. The ones that are successful are much better at playing those games. It's like a big game of chess.
Well, in your case, it was also your network. And, you know, we talk constantly, you know, I've always been necessarily, it's not what you know, it's who you know, and your network of who you know and who you knew in your industry obviously helped propel that product, you know, and expand that product, which is fantastic. So that's something we always discuss, you know, internally as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Networking is a huge part of business for sure, especially in the social media age. I mean, if you're not using social media to promote your brand and your business, you're probably not going to get too far these days. I mean, that's where everybody's at. It's where everybody's dialed into. And you have so much opportunity to advertise on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. I mean, YouTube, there's all kinds of ways to get your brand and products out in front of people. If you really want to focus in and learn how to do that stuff.
For free half the time too.
Yeah. It's getting harder and harder. You know, those social media platforms are tricky because they're always changing their algorithms, and you gotta constantly stay on top of that. And I find in my day to day, and I'll be 47 years old in December. And I can remember when I was younger, and you always heard, you know, older people that are my age now, you know, you always hear them say, I can't keep up with this technology these days. And that's back when they were dealing with VCRs, going from VCRs to DVD players. You know, that was the technological advances they were dealing with. Now this day we're dealing with, I mean, crap, they're dropping new iPhones every 2 months, and it's lightning fast technology these days. And you got to be on the edge of your seat all the time to keep up with stuff.
Yep. And you got to be able to identify what you can skip, because if you try to stay up on everything, you're just going to drown. So platforms like you were talking for social media, there are certain platforms for each market, and there are some that are going to be much more beneficial to your market than the others. If you stretch yourself too thin trying to be on 9 different platforms because they're all the new hot thing, you're just wasting resources. So focus on your target, snag those platforms that are really good for you, and then put your efforts there, and that'll usually help propel you farther.
Yeah, and then it's a layered thing too, you know, like you have like Facebook and Instagram, for example. You have your news feed, and then you have your stories. Mm-hmm. And depending on what platform you're on, like Instagram, it's better to advertise on your stories than on your feed. And on Facebook, it's different. It's better to advertise on your feed and not so much on your stories. The demographics are different. You know, the things that people look at on the different platforms are different. You know, when I'm on Instagram, I hardly ever scroll my feed. I'm always looking at stories all the time. I mean, Facebook's different. I don't hardly ever look at Facebook stories. I always look at my news feed on Facebook.
Yeah, and they're both owned by the same people.
Yeah. I don't know what the rhyme or the reason is to it. You know, it's just, it is what it is.
Well, you know, they say like, sell your products where your customers are, you know, and that kind of thing. And this is the same thing when you look at it digitally. Where are my customers? Are they watching stories? If so, I should be making stories. Are they reading through the feed? Sure, I'll put it in the feed. Like, you wouldn't go put your, you know, tattoo supplies in a grocery store.
No. And you know, it's interesting too, with the supply business on Facebook, we get more interaction from if we post like stupid memes, you know, that, I mean, we just put a stupid meme on our timeline and it gets like 1200 likes and 65 shares. And then if we post something about a product, it gets 10 likes if you don't promote it. And it gets like maybe no shares, you know? So,
what does everybody want to see? That's for sure.
it's perplexing to say the least, for sure. I have hired firms now to take all that over for me now. So I don't really, the only social media I really mess with now are my personal feeds. And I get a lot of engagement on my personal feeds, you know, and I can post about products, which I do a lot. And I do videos a lot, and those get a lot of engagement. So that's what works for me. I try to stay in my lane there, and then I just let the experts. I have a marketing firm that we outsource a lot of that stuff to, and they just manage all the advertising on our social media, and we get way better results that way.
So we've been, you know, talking about overnight success in entrepreneurship, and we know that that overnight success can't or isn't possible for everyone. However, we also know with hard work and dedication, things can happen and success can be achieved. Many business owners continue to try and fail before they do have success. They have many opportunities that didn't go as well as they had wanted to. And also failure is an important part of the process. So what do you think of the importance of failure in terms of your own path and how it's helped you in, you know, move forward?
So I think every failure is a stepping stone to success, right? Which probably a lot of successful people will say the same thing. So to me, failure is not an option. You know, I've lost a lot of money in past ventures that I tried to get off the ground and they didn't stick for whatever reason. But I always picked myself back up, recuperated, and went on to the next idea that I had. I've just always been an idea guy. And if I think it's a good idea, I act on it. And sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But when it isn't, I try to find the silver lining in there and take away the positives that I had in those, you know, paths and apply the good things to the next one. And eventually, like I said, you know, you'll find something eventually that will stick if you're persistent and you keep on track and you just don't give up. I mean, that's why a lot of people fail. I feel like they just don't. They hear no too many times and they get discouraged and they lose their drive and their energy. But you just can't take no as an answer. You have to believe in yourself, first of all, and you have to believe in the idea that you have. Then you have to get good at convincing other people that it's a good idea. And that's when you'll find success.
So you said you started really at 17, you know, being an entrepreneur. What has kept you motivated through all these years to keep pushing yourself? I know you had success in your very first business, but you said that kind of tapered off after high school. So what's kept pushing you? You know, what was your end goal?
Ooh, that's tricky because I don't know if I have ever really had an end goal. I've just always been wired like this. You know, I like having control of my own destiny. I've always been miserable when I've worked for other people and I've had to, you know, I got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I got to be to work by 5. I got to do whatever they tell me to do, whether I like it or not. Maybe sometimes I'm not making the money I felt like I should be making for the job I'm doing. I mean, it's the typical stuff that every employee or another person deals with. And also coupled with the fact that if you're a good employee and you're good at what you do and you realize that you're making a company a ton of money and you're only seeing a small percentage of that, you feel like you'd be better off applying your talent to your own thing and seeing more reward for yourself. And it feels better, you know? So that's just kind of where I've always been at. You know, I've just always felt like I could do things on my own and apply my talents to things that would benefit me more in the long run. And you know, I always go back to this guy. I worked at a place called Atlas Dive for about 17 years. I just quit there in 2016. I was moonlighting, running my business while I was working there full time. I was actually a plant manager there for the last 5 years. I always go back to this one guy that I worked with. His name was Dave. And he retired from there when he was 65. But that was the only job he ever had. He worked there from the time he was 16 years old in high school. And it was the only job he ever had. And I remember talking to that guy when he retired. And I just thought to myself, I was like, there is no way I could be content at 65 years old if this is all I did with my life for all these years. Like, that feels so unfulfilling to me, you know? And I'm just that guy where I have this mentality where I only get to be on this planet one time. And what am I going to do with the time while I'm here? You know? So yeah. I want to do things I want to do. And I want to do things that I enjoy doing. And I like tattooing and I like business. And I went to college for business. So I always wanted to do something with business. And I enjoy the challenge of business. It's a chess game. It's strategic. It's challenging. And I like that.
So would you say you're competitive then?
Yeah, but more of myself than anyone else.
Yes.
You know?
So what I'm hearing from you and, you know, that you were kind of born an entrepreneur And it takes a certain personality. Obviously, not everyone can, you know, can be an entrepreneur or would be good at it. But for you, it sounds like from the very beginning, that's just the type of person you were, you know, not only a go-getter, but, you know, constantly challenging yourself and constantly challenging yourself to find, you know, that next step, goal, plan, whatever that may be. So would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I get a little torn on things, you know, because like I think of things on a broad spectrum. Like I grew up without a lot. So like, I know people in my position can get from nothing to something. And so when I see people that have nothing tell me that they're just always going to have nothing, I don't necessarily subscribe to that. I don't even think you have to go to college in this day and age to be successful. I mean, there, you can literally go on YouTube and learn about anything for free. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you have interest in something and you want to become a master at something, it's really as simple as going on YouTube, looking at 100 videos that talk about that something and experts in that area of something, learning as much as you can about that something, and then applying yourself at it and trying to find a way to do that something better than everybody else is doing it.
And I think that's great advice all the way around. And something that, you know, we've discussed a lot, you know, over the years of what is the importance of, you know, college, of education, it, you know, just internally as a business, what do we look for in employees coming in? So it's definitely a challenge to find that balance. But from what I hear too, it's find what you love and find a way to, you know, get good at it and make money at it. Because you seem very passionate about just your industry and you've always been a part of that and something that you really enjoyed. And I think if you have that passion behind what you're doing, that obviously always propels you into the next phase and the next step as well.
Yeah, it all translates, yeah.
There's one trait that I tend to look for in people, like I've said this before, I think on LinkedIn or something, but when hiring or when working with people or teaming up with people, it's that drive to continually learn, change, improve, adapt. It's something you cannot teach someone how to do. They have to just already have it inside them. And those are the people I see. Anybody who's successful, you can just tell they have that drive. They're always learning new stuff, no matter what it's about. It could be something they really enjoy, something that's for work, but they're always learning and they're always willing to keep learning and they're not stuck in their ways and, you know, just trying to stay in the same day every day. They're always trying to move forward to that next day and what's new and how can we improve our processes? How can we improve our business? That stuff. And that really, I think, is something that's really important to become successful is have that drive. Invest in yourself. Like you said, you got to believe in yourself.
Yeah. When I was in the dye industry, I tried to jump ship one time and I wanted to go work for this other dye company that was on the other side of town. And they were a smaller dye company. And I went in there and I sat with the owner for an interview. And I said, hey, you know, I can come in here. I can help you get this business from, you know, I can help you grow this business 20-30% the next year. You know what I mean? Like, and here's how I can do it. Mm-hmm. And the guy sat across from me and told me, he's like, well, I'm not really interested in growing this company. I'm comfortable where I'm at. And to hear an owner of a business say that was really like, I just didn't understand that. I'm like, why are you in business if you don't want to grow your business and become bigger in business? I mean, that kind of stuff doesn't compute with me. Like I didn't want to work for that guy when he said that, you know, I don't want to work for a guy that doesn't want to grow his company. That's not hungry, you know? Like,
right.
Yeah. If he's holding himself back, he's going to hold you back or everybody else that works there.
Yeah, exactly. And So I just never understood that mentality. And I don't get it. You know, even when I had employees, I said the same thing, similar to what you just said. You know, it's like, I can teach you how to do a job, but I can't teach you how to do the job well or efficiently, or, you know, those are things that are wired internally into people. And, you know, right. You either have it or you don't. And you would hope to be able to find all the people that have that. But I've found in my travels through life that those people are pretty rare breed of people.
I would agree with that completely. And just like you said, you know, as a manager myself, I can teach you the job all day long. I can teach you the process. I cannot teach you drive. I cannot teach you motivation. So, you know, and I can help with motivation, you know, as a leader, you know, instead of a manager, but yeah, those people are few and far between and are rare. And when you get them, you want to keep them. but you can't, you know, you always want, because of how they are, you want to build them up to the next, you know, to the next platform, yeah. Because you can't, you know, because like you said, you're not going to settle. They're not going to settle. They're right. Not just going to be happy coasting. So.
Right. Yep. Those are the people that have it. And those are the people that you have to, I don't want to say worry, because you want those people to be successful. You want them to find success. You have to be worried about them, you know, leaving you at some point in time, because they're the people that are going to go out and start their own businesses when they find that thing that they're good at and they hone in on that. And, you know, you want that for them, but you're right. At the same time, you don't want to lose that leverage that you have with them in your wheelhouse either.
Yeah, that's
it's like coaching a football team, you know, managing people is just like coaching a football team. You got A players, you got B players. The B players are the ones sitting on the bench and getting put in when the good players are down and out.
And I like that you said that, because I've often wondered, you know, we've changed to calling employees team members in, you know, corporate business for the most part, because, you know, that we want to enforce the word team, but we don't call managers coaches. And that's really what they need to be. They don't need to be a manager. You manage processes. If you want to coach your people, you should be called a coach. And why haven't we changed that terminology?
Yeah, coaches are there to motivate, right? So if you have as a manager, your goal is to get X amount of dollars generated daily, right? That's your main priority as a manager. You know, your focus is the bottom line, and you got to get this amount out the back door every day. So what's my job as a coach? To motivate my people to get that number out the back door. Plain and simple. I mean, that's the main goal of my job as a manager and a coach.
Yep.
To play the, you know, to call the plays every day and make sure I'm putting the right people in the right positions to make sure we win the game that day.
Yeah, get them invested, make sure they're happy. You know, when you're invested and motivated to do something, you're going to put 10 times that effort in. Like if you go somewhere because you're forced to be there, you're going to be there. You'll get it done maybe, but it's not going to get done as well as it could have been. And if somebody's invested, they're happy to show up to work. They're ready to go. They want to take the day on and move on to the next day, just like you would at a game. You get pumped before a game because you're going to go out and you're going to win. You can win at work every day too.
Right.
So I guess, you know, we've went through tons of all the different challenges and everything in becoming successful in entrepreneurship and some of the stuff, you know, the fallacies of overnight success. But one of the big things that people don't talk about a lot is how do you then, once you've reached that level, maintain that success against everything, you know, your motivation for yourself, your competition, the market, all this stuff. So I guess you want to move into talking a little bit more about maintaining that success now?
Sure. I mean, so for me, it's just a constant desire. I always want my brand to be considered like the Nike or North Face of the tattoo industry. You know, like I want to be that name that everyone recognizes. And when they see that, like I'm just a household name in the tattoo industry, right? So I'm not there yet, right? I don't feel like I'm there yet. I can still come across people that haven't heard of my brand. Now, granted, it's few and far between these days, but there are still people out there. You know, the industry is going through a turnover period right now. You know, we've got a lot of veteran artists that have been in the industry for a long time that are older now, and they're kind of going into retirement phases of their life. And you've got a whole new younger generation of tattoo artists coming into the industry now, you know, and these are the guys that haven't necessarily heard of Electrum and any of these other major brands out here. So it's a constant, you don't just get there and stay there. You constantly have to stay in the face of people all the time, every single day. So, because every day there's a new customer coming out into the marketplace and you want to secure them before your competition secures them, you know? And so to maintain success, my main focus is on customer service and quality in my products.
Yeah.
It's the thing that gives you the edge over your competition, because I feel like a lot of the companies in the tattoo industry aren't really focused on customer service and relationships with artists. They view artists more as, you know, just how much money are you going to spend with them? What else can I sell you today? Instead of having if artists call our shop, you know, we ask, you know, how's your family doing? We have personal relationships with our customers and the people that use our products. And we try to maintain that, you know, we're very friendly. We're very responsive to messages. We try to answer messages very quickly on social media, through emails, voicemails, whatever the case may be. We try to be very responsive. If we have issues with orders, we try to be responsive and fix them as quick as we can. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what gives us a competitive edge. And that's where we try to stay focused at. But it gets hard when you're trying to scale a business, you know, and you have limited resources to do that with. You have to start spreading people thin, and then you add more stress to the environment. You know, then you're presenting brand new challenges that make it hard. So that's kind of where we're at today in this day and age. You know, we've grown so fast that it's been kind of hard to keep up with the growth. And, you know, we're having those kind of struggles now in our day to day. And like I said, it's fun, it's challenging, and we're staying there. We don't see any signs of decline. So my focus is to be the top brand in the industry. And it'll probably be my focus till the day I decide to stop doing it.
So, I mean, that's something that we analyze constantly across the board is what gives somebody an edge? What makes somebody different from the competition? And for me, I've always said that the building blocks are quality and customer service. It, no matter what else, you know, we throw into that recipe, to it always feels that it comes back to the, I guess, the human interaction, you know, and how well we communicate. And obviously, like you said, the quality of products, because that's never, you know, never going to go out the door. So I was happy that talked about that, you know, as being so successful in different businesses that you feel the same, that the building blocks are still have still the pillars are still there. And also, you know, the constant adapting. And that's, as we talked earlier, having that A+ person or that star, one of the qualities that they will have is being able to adapt consistently and ongoing. And, you know, you said as the new tattooers come in, they may have new styles, new needs, new. So what is the latest thing in that constant change and being able to adapt in that setting? Bravo to you for continuing that.
You have to listen to your customers and the feedback they give you, and you have to adapt to what they want, not what you want, but what they want.
Yes.
If there's one thing that you might do on a day-to-day to improve just the overall quality of your business for your customers, do you have anything that comes to mind that you guys focus on daily that makes sure you're trying to aim at that goal?
You know, just how can we put a better product out there? You know, it's because we're constantly, you know, at this point, we've established such a good brand name. We put out, you know, for example, during the pandemic, when everything was shut down, I had a lot of projects on the back burner, and I just really hyper-focused on all these unfinished projects that I had. And we ended up releasing probably, I think, 10 new products during quarantine. You know, they just had a few finishing things that they needed to be done on them to get out the door. But like I said, the focus is always quality. We're just always trying to make sure that anything that has the Electrum name on it has been thoroughly tested, is the absolute best it can be, and it's better than any other product that's out there that may be in the same category. You take like tattoo aftercare, for example, there's 100 different tattoo aftercares, and probably 90 of them are both pretty much all the same with just a little bit of a different combination of ingredients in them. But there's not much that separates them from one another except for the packaging and the way they look.
Yeah.
So when we come out with products, it's not about, hey, let's duplicate the same thing that XYZ company's doing. There's no need to do that. It's already been done 90 times. We need to come out with something that's different, better than those other 90 products. That's going to differentiate and give artists an advantage. So that's where my focus is and what keeps us on the cutting edge of the industry. I look at other brands out here and I don't see a whole lot of brands that really focus on it. You know, they're coming out with new things, but they're just basically repackaging them or making them look different or redesigning a mold for something and changing the way it looks and giving it a different name. And, you know, there's, I don't want to say names, but there's one company out there that's an ink company, and they've got 25 different black inks under their brand.
What?
There's only so many ways you can make a black ink. I mean, yeah. It's like, why are you going to have 25 black inks? You know, it's like, it doesn't make sense. Huh. I don't know.
So
not
what
like
is
making improvements?
So your focus is constantly, what can I do to continually improve my client's day-to-day life? You know, what can I do?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So innovating, research, development, and obviously, so your clients are the tattoo artists themselves for the most part in the shops and all that stuff. And if they're getting good products in their shops, using these products on their clientele is going to come back to that shop, they're going to be happy with you for supplying them with the products that their clients really love. And then, you know, it's kind of circle of life at that point. So
yeah.
I know when I got most of my tattoos, it was A&D ointment that was recommended for aftercare. There were, I think there was one aftercare product that came out maybe when I was like 18. That wasn't a
now
thing.
There's 100 of them.
Yeah.
It's like completely oversaturated.
So you
artists that come to me, and, like, I do a lot of consulting with artists and stuff like that, business consulting and stuff on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And I will have artists come to me all the time and they'll be like, I have an idea for an aftercare. And I'm like, whoa, stop. I'm like, just throw that one away. Like, that's not a good idea. And they're like, but it's such a good product. And I'm like, well, tell me what makes it different than the other 90 products that are out. What's in it? What's different? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's got this. And I say, well, so does that product. Same thing. What? It's not different. What? Yeah. How do you think you're going to live off of $10,000 a year? Because if you're lucky, that's how much you're going to sell.
Right.
And you're going to have to put a ton of work and sweat equity into it to get that 10 grand back out of it.
Right.
It's not a sound move. You know, you need to find something that is not being done yet. Or if it is being done, it's being done on such a small scale that there's a ton of room for you to get in there and make an impact.
Yeah.
So that's a good segue into, you know, the next question I have for you is, being at the go-getter that you are, you probably have opportunities that present themselves frequently or new ideas. When you have that idea or that new opportunity present itself, what do you do then? Are you moving on? Are you still open to new opportunities? How do you handle that?
I'm always open to new opportunities. And I could tell you about a recent failure that I had. I'm a lot more apprehensive about working with other people these days and on other people's ideas. I lost $30,000 roughly last year, because I believed in someone else's idea and I wanted to help them get it off the ground. They didn't have the money to get their idea off the ground. Right? And it is, in retrospect, it is still a great idea. Unfortunately, it just doesn't have the right people behind it. I could put the money behind it, but if the mentality isn't there behind the person that had the idea, because they have to be the driving force behind it. I can't be the driving force behind it. But I told the person, you know, I was like, hey, this is a great idea. I would love to help you get this idea off the ground, but we need to patent this thing. Like, before we even go anywhere with it, it needs to be patented. So we invested the money in helping this guy get a patent for the thing. And then I helped him source manufacturing, and I brought the whole project together. And then between him and the manufacturing process, it was just a major fiasco. I mean, they couldn't get along. They couldn't see eye to eye with, he couldn't see eye to eye with the engineers. Everything he was telling the engineers in the manufacturing side to do wasn't being followed. And then they said he wasn't giving them clear instructions. And then we got our first run of production models in, and they were just completely crap. I mean, they were crap. Like, the whole run was garbage, and we couldn't go to market with it. There was no way that I could have my name associated with it and put it out on market. I pulled the plug. And at that point in time, I was just like, I had to take my loss, you know, and just cut it off, because I was bleeding at that point. And I realized I wasn't going to get my money back. And if I kept on path, I was just going to keep losing money. So now, after I took a $30,000 hit on that last one, now I'm a lot more skeptical about things. You know, I really want to help people find success. I want to get behind people, and I want to believe in other people's dreams. And I really want to help other people see their dream. But sometimes dreams aren't always translating into good reality, and you have to be realistic about it, because you're right. A lot of people approach me about things and want my help with things, and I have to say no 99% of the time. It's just not a good fit.
Right. Reminds me of Shark Tank. Maybe we'll see you up there as one of the investors on Shark Tank these days. Good TV
nice.
Right there. That's for sure.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yes.
Yeah. That would be. Yeah, that's where I see myself ideally in the future. You know, when I'm ready to get out and retire, you know, I would like to take any money that I've made in my life and just be able to do more philanthropy and, you know, investing in other people's businesses and things like that. You know,
capital venturism or something like
yeah.
that.
I know what you know what I'm saying.
You know, knowledge is something you can't pay for unless someone's willing to give it to you too. So having all these years of experience is very valuable to a lot of people starting out.
Yeah, you know, we've taken our bumps and bruises. So I think a lot of, you know, hell, I would love to sit down with Elon Musk and pick his brain for, hell, just an hour. I mean, just imagine the stuff that's up inside that dude's can. Like, I don't even know how these guys operate on the level they do. Jeff Bezos, you know, I was just talking to somebody the other day about Jeff Bezos, and I'm like, how the hell does this dude manage a company that size? How is that even possible? That's just crazy to me. Like, I was driving down the street and we drove, well, you guys are from the area. You go, you see all these trailer manufacturers and vehicles. I mean, I drove past some place and there was like 1,000 freaking Amazon vans sitting in this empty lot. And I'm like, man, that's just here. These things are all over the United States. I'm like, and this guy's at the head of this thing. Like, how do you manage something that monumental? You know, it's crazy.
He doesn't. He drives a vision everyone else manages.
you see those old pictures that pop up on Instagram where he's sitting at a desk in his garage, you know, with books around him and stuff. And then you look where he's at today and you're like, man, I can't even imagine.
Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, they both have those photos too in their garage, yeah, trying to build the first computers.
I just don't understand that level of Warren Buffett's and things like that. You know, like, I don't understand how those guys do what they do.
Yeah,
I just really don't. It's beyond me.
So just to not go too long here, I think we should, we went over a lot of great stuff. So I want to kind of just do a recap over some stuff and then maybe get your final thoughts for anybody who is trying to set out to be an entrepreneur now. Biggest takeaways, I think, is failure. I don't believe it's an option either, but it's also not an end. It's a transition from one stage to the next stage, and you're going to learn from every failure and you're going to learn from every success, and they're just as important as one another. Success is boring and it's repetitive. You're doing a lot of the same processes over and over. If you think success is exciting, then you're probably not doing it right. It's supposed to be boring and repetitive because it's small changes that make you successful over a long period of time. I have three questions that I try to answer at least once a week. What did I do to achieve, or what did I do to work towards achieving my overall goal? What processes helped me get there this week? And then how can I improve those processes for the next week? And I try to just keep that in the back of my mind. And I even have success is boring written on my wall on a sticky note, just so I can remind myself when I'm sitting here bored that this is what success is. So those are things that are important to me. Hopefully they're important to some of the listeners that can take away something from that, especially the failure thing. I think that is really important. So somebody new, somebody trying to start this now, what kind of advice can you give to them?
Well, I would tell them to stop focusing on things like get rich quick on social media. It's a stupid gimmicky thing. That's a phase. You know, it's a trend. All the social media stuff is a trend. 10 years from now, Facebook and Instagram are going to be things of the past, and there's going to be some new thing out there. It's not a sustainable way of maintaining a business or a lifestyle. You know, that's just a trend. Business is sustainable. And if you want to be successful in business, the things I would tell people starting out is, number one, believe in yourself. If you're not a confident person, find ways to become a confident person. Take some public speaking classes, get comfortable talking in large groups of people. That's a huge way to boost your confidence and become comfortable in your own skin. Or take some acting classes, get into drama clubs, get into local acting classes, and get up on a stage and perform in front of people. There's a ton of things you can do to boost your confidence and your self-esteem. Social media is not a good outlet for that kind of stuff. There's a lot of trolls on social media, and people don't celebrate success on social media. People hate success on social media. They dog on you on social media. And it's a terrible place to try to boost your self-esteem and your confidence. So get your head out of that first place. And the second thing is, pick up books, read, educate yourself on whatever your specialty is, whether it's in college or out of college. Network is huge. Go down, join your chamber of commerce, network with local business owners. You got to make connections. You got it. I hate people that say, what's that thing? Self-made, right? People say self-made. I'm self-made. Yeah. I hate it when people say that. And every time I hear it, I challenge people that say that. I'm like, tell me how you're self-made, because you came out of your mom and you weren't made by yourself. So you weren't self-made from day one. So how do you figure you're self-made in business? You know, somebody opens doors for you somewhere and helps you get your foot in the door somewhere. That always has to happen. So, you know, you have to get comfortable with speaking to people, shaking hands, playing the game, and being confident in who you are and what you want to do. And that's the catapult to success in my mind.
It's great advice. Yeah. I didn't think about being dependent from day one. Like, we've always just needed somebody else.
You always need somebody.
Right.
I mean, you always have to have somebody else's help to do something.
I've never looked at it like that. You know, when people are saying they're self-made, I've never looked at it like that. And that's 100% the truth. No, you're not. You know, you're not. There's always somebody that opened that door for you.
That's great. You have to be grateful and realizing that. And you have to be willing to do the same things. You know, you have to help people out when you can help people out. I mean, if you're a charismatic person that cares about other people, you know, it's like that boomerang effect. You know, whatever you throws out comes back in. So it's applicable to your everyday life, your family life, your business life, your personal life, your love life. You have to operate the same way in all aspects of your life.
And be truthful and honest about it. If you try to fake it, people can tell right away. So it's not in you. Right? You can try, but if you get caught in the middle.
Yeah, no, but that's one thing I can tell from you, just from talking to you, you know, just this time, you're real. You say like it is, you go for it. And I value that in a person, hands down. And I think across the board, people want that transparency. They want that authentic, real person that they're dealing with. They don't want that fakeness. And I think that's come back more and more and more. So,
yeah, you know, I wasn't always a confident person. I really had to get comfortable stepping out of my shell. And, you know, just like on social media, you know, I'm a jokester. Social media is not a good representation of who I am in business. It's a very accurate representation of who I am in my personal life, but it doesn't translate to the person that I am in business. I'm a very serious person when it comes to business. I have a very playful side, but I don't bring my playful side to work. When it's time to work, I'm on it. I'm goal oriented. I'm task oriented. And I'm getting my job done the way I need to get it done at 110% every single time, you know, even when I don't want to, still got to come to the game and I got to put in 110%. And so, that's the mindset that you have to have every single day. And I think you said that once already in this interview too. You know, you got to come in ready to play even when you don't want to play, even when it's a boring day.
Work hard, play hard. Enjoy life. You know, it'll get you where you want to be. And I, you know, I'm going to start following you because I definitely want to see some of those memes you were talking about. You know, I'm interested.
I'm a crazy guy, so you know, just be prepared. I'm not a family friendly social media guy. I can tell you that. So keep your kids away from my social media.
Okay. You gotta know your market. You're not a, you know, kids don't get tattoos.
That's great.
All right. Well, Rob, it has been super great talking to you today, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me.
Wrap up here now, and we will talk to everybody later.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good deal. Thanks.